Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, episode 10, on Tuesday the 10th of November 2015. This is your weekly discussion of motoring news. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
How are you doing this week?
Oh, not too bad. Quiet week.
Quiet week. It seems to have been a pretty quiet week car news-wise as well, to be honest.
Yes. Well, after Tokyo, there was Dubai open today. There was SEMA as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where there might have been the odd picture of an MX-5.
I didn't notice.
Didn't you? No, okay, that's good.
No, I'm not mentioning it tonight.
No? Are you sure?
No, there's this guy on Twitter who keeps extracting the urine.
But to be fair, those spiders did look pretty cool. Those MX-5 spiders. But I haven't paid much attention to that or to Dubai yet, actually.
No, there was some pretty horrific stuff at SEMA. There's the really lovely stuff, like those... Drat, you've got me straight into talking about MX-5s. Like those MX-5s, I particularly liked the, not Speedster, the other one. Fantastic lights in the grill. But there was some pretty horrific stuff, all the usual big wheels, big shiny stuff, and just some horrible, horrible body kits and some horrible, horrible colours. So it does seem to be a bit of a place where taste goes to die. Not unlike Dubai, to be perfect. Honest. But anyway, we've managed to go off the running order straight away. So should we start off with some news, mate?
Yes.
So yeah, let's start off with some of the news then, shall we? First thing is this month, it's that time of the month when the car sales figures are released. And this month there is bad news. Well, it's not really bad news. I think SMMT are describing it as stabilization, aren't they? But funnily enough, after such a record month last month with everyone rushing in to get their new registrations on their cars, there has been a drop of 1.1%. Not a lot, but it is the first drop of any type following like 43 months of consecutive growth. So yeah, there is a little bit of a dip there.
But it was bound to happen.
Oh, it was always going to happen.
And it's how people reacted to that. I mean, I saw in the mainstream press, they leapt on it and immediately said, oh, look, Volkswagen, you've got a problem.
Oh.
And then one of them finally went, yeah, Ford didn't do great and someone else didn't do as well as normally. And, oh, actually... You know, maybe not everybody sold positively this time.
I mean,
talk about kicking someone when they're down.
I know, just ridiculous. I mean, let's look at this. The numbers of drop are essentially rounding errors. 1.1% is, as I say, it's within tolerance for stability, as far as I'm concerned. Market share for diesel fuel cars fell by 0.5%.
We're talking 2,000 cars. On last year.
The month after the new registration.
Yeah.
So everyone will have been trying to get them last month. This following month, it's just not going to be the same. Last month, I mean September, of course. I'm sorry. Diesel fuels drop 0.5%. There are some changes from some of the alternative fuel vehicles. Alternative fuel vehicles up 13.8% and accounted for 3% of the market. So it's not all doom and gloom. Not all doom and gloom at all.
No, and you've got to put this on the back of the fact that for the last, it's got to be 4 or 5 months, financial press and the mainstream press have been saying, oh, we're going back into recession. Everything's doomed again. We're doomed, I tell you.
It's all doomed.
And you just go, well, eventually people are going to start to go, well, okay, maybe I just won't buy this time. But there's also a capacity thing. I mean, I've been astounded with how many new cars have been registered. I just think, who is buying all these cars? Because this miraculous recovery we're supposed to have had, I can see glimpses of it, but not to the point where people are going out and shelling out for cars again and houses and all this. But it's happening. You know, people are getting access to money again. and people are buying. You know, most cars are on finance anyway, aren't they? Mm-hmm. And we talked about this in September.
Yeah.
So, of course, it's going to stay. I mean, the fact it's only gone down, you know, 2,000 cars, you know, 1.1%.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that was on. That's on the total. No. It's 2,000 cars.
Yeah.
On last year, it's quite a large number, but it's nothing really in the grand scheme of things. So, yeah, it's got to even out, and this is why SMMT started revising their predictions for next year.
Mm-hmm.
A month or so ago. I mean, you know, there's got to be not necessarily a stall, but it's got to slow down.
Yeah, there's got to be, as it says. I don't want to. It's a bit of a horrible non-word, but a stabilization.
Yeah.
I was interested to see what the list of the top 10 for October were, though. I think much of it's a little bit on the predictable side. But it's interesting. But it's interesting just how far ahead the number one top-selling car, the Ford Fiesta, is over number two, the Vauxhall Corsa. So Ford Fiesta, 8,577 cars registered, and the Corsa, 5,061,
which is only four ahead of the Golf.
Only literally four ahead of the Golf. Yes,
and fair dues to Volkswagen for selling all those Golfs.
Well, that's it. That's exactly. Well,
and then then A3s are down there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And Polos. So how much of a dent has the whole emissions thing done for Volkswagen?
Well, don't forget, mate, that some of these will have been ordered before all of this as company cars and things, and will have been ordered into the fleets already. So the orders will be there. It will have been expensive to do it. The Polo, there's not that many Polos are sold as diesels these days. The market for small diesel cars has almost disappeared.
Well, is it the TFI or is it the TSI, whatever engine they have now? Okay, so you get some amazing miles per gallon out of that.
You do.
Yes, we have the little caveat that
yes,
they might have been massaged, these figures, but still, considering you put it up against my 2001 2-litre Focus and what I can get out of that, even driving in my slippers and being all Sunday driver, it's still nothing near what you get with the current cars now. And the technology really has, you know, in 15 years, it is amazing what you can do.
Well, I did 300-odd miles at the weekend. And
in what was that, Alan?
I can't possibly comment, but 41.3 miles to the gallon or something.
See, now that really is gloating.
That was gloating.
I've never hit
41.3 miles to the gallon, and that wasn't... I was more gentle on the way back because I was trying to see if I could get from home to Teesside and back on one tank of fuel. And so there was quite a lot of sitting, the cruise control set at 65. But I was making more rapid progress than that on the way north.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think it's pretty good. Anyway, moving back, it's nice to see a couple of British-built cars in there. Nissan Qashqai in at number 5, Nissan Juke in at number 8.
Yes.
And bringing up numbers 9 and 10... just for completeness, BMW 1 Series at number 9 and the 3 Series at number 10, both of which, you know, the diesel engine, well, mostly been sold in diesel, I imagine, here in the UK, and the diesel engine's getting quite a lot of British input as well. So that's good news for British manufacturing and construction.
It is. I find that 3 Series interesting because if you look at the year to date, the Mercedes-Benz C-Class is at number 10, and there's no other premium inverted commas of that mid-size and larger.
Yeah. I'm just making sure I've got that same page as you have up. Year-to-date. You're right. Now, that is very curious, because I wouldn't have thought that the C-Class would have been in there. But I am seeing more. Now you mention it, I'm seeing more and more of them, but I would have actually still expected the 3 Series to be in there ahead of that.
I can't remember. The C-Class had a facelift or a new one recently.
It did.
Ish. The 3 Series hasn't, has it?
Yes. Yes, it wasn't that long ago either. There was a slight revision.
But I think the C-Class was a more fundamental, because you've got that daft rear end and the lights that I don't want to get started on.
It's not the lights, it's the fake exhaust pipes, and they've done it to the A-Class. Yes. They've done it to the A-Class too. They've taken this A-Class facelift. I was admiring an A-Class I was behind not so long ago, and I was thinking, that's really nice. Quite like that. Look at that, and it's got proper... I can see the exhaust pipes, proper exhaust pipes. And then I was behind another 65 plate one the other day, and it was like, oh, they've done it again. They've put that plastic stuff at the bottom, and they put these fake exhaust pipes on. It's just, oh, give up, everyone.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realise Mercedes were doing that, and I was stuck at lights, and I took a picture, and I can't believe Mercedes have done that. That so cheapens it. I mean, I've put on Twitter before, there's a white C-Class that's got dreadful wheels, and it seems to be in POV spec. I don't like white anyway, which everybody knows. Mm-hmm. But this white does not flatter the shape. You need to have it in a dark colour, preferably a grey, whatever their gunmetal grey thing is. Mm-hmm. And preferably have the little lip up on the boot to try and hide the fact that it seems to melt at the back end. They've stuck the tacky Halfords tailpipes on the back end. And you think, oh, come on, you're much better than that. You know, you're saying you're premium, and then you do that. You think, no. And
Did it upset you?
I got cross, you know, more than I should have, really, because it's just a car that I don't own and anything like that. But I got cross about it. I thought, no, you shouldn't do that. There's no need for it. I mean, I can see if you're on a Honda Civic and the top end one's got that triangle thing and you, like, you know, the shape looks good on the back and you can do that, because that's not a premium. You know, you're not aiming at 30 grand's worth of car there. Or 35 or 40 grand, depends how many specs you tick. Right. So I can see when it's a more mainstream car, but when you're saying we are premium, we are quality, and you do something like, oh, we'll have filled in fake exhaust, well, you're not now. And I think less of you. And that disappoints me. And I get disproportionately angry.
Oh, that's them unsubscribing, isn't it?
Yes. I won't be able to go and see
but
them.
But yes, you've been getting no invitation. Well, you might get a single invitation to Milton Keynes, but you may not leave again. Sorry. So actually, well done to Mercedes for actually selling that many so far. 37,748 Mercedes C-Class been sold in the year to date, just in case you're interested, no matter what the tailpipes are like.
Yep. Yes. Anyway, moving on. I don't want to rant again.
No.
Last week, I wasn't ranting, but Twitter was. Twitter got very cross because the head of... what was he? The Bedfordshire Police, the chief inspector or chief constable, was at the Home Affairs Select Committee, and he was suggesting ways that he could get money in that meant that he could employ more police officers, or not even cut police officers. And Twitter and the internet went a little bit angry. Because he said, we're going to have the cameras on all the time and it's going to be zero tolerance. And your initial reaction is, great. The car driver of today, the cash cow of this country, is stung again. But on the flip side of that, I do sort of feel for the guy, because they are having their budgets cut. And he is trying, but he's not, I am making a few presumptions here. I am presuming he's not a stupid person, so he knew that would get big headlines.
Yes, I do think that there was a certain play towards that.
And because he got the headlines,
yeah,
then the government, who has said they are the friend of the motorist, like they're the friend of everybody's at the moment, but Yeah, that's a different matter. Although how that shows itself is different ways. But, I mean, at what point do they suddenly go, you know, hang on, perhaps we do need to, you know, we have dropped a bit of a clanger there, we do need to put some more funding in, or...
Right. So, I'm split on this one. Okay, I really am quite split on this. On one point, from one angle, I think that Ollie Martins, Police and Crime Commissioner for Bedfordshire Police, has played a really clever one here by making it a thing. Okay, and I think that was clever, and he obviously realised it would cause an outcry. Although, let's face it, the speed limit through there, it is a variable zone. You very rarely reach 70, even in the evenings, in the late evenings. It's part of the motorway that I drive relatively often. A few times a month, anyway. So you very rarely hit 70 through there anyway, and people are pretty good at adhering to the variable speed limits. So on one hand, you shouldn't be speeding anyway.
Yes, okay. I mean, that's
one side.
The ultimate, end of the argument is, but you were speeding.
Yeah.
You were breaking the law. Yeah. It's the perception of it, isn't it?
The problem I have is that the whole idea that, now I know that a certain chunk of the speed fines go to local policing, the rest of it goes back to central government to fund a number of initiatives, not all of which are motoring related. But to form a number of to support a number of initiatives. But what I really, really don't want, and what really worries me, would be if it turned around and everybody said, actually, you've got to be bringing in the speeding fine cash to fund, you know, in order to fund your police force. Okay, there are small communities in the US where this is the case, and all it does is that rather than doing anything, rather than being as constructive and useful as they may well be and acting as, you know, defenders of the people, then what's actually happening is that police officers are spending their time out gathering revenue. Okay, the police service is never going to be a neutral value on the balance sheet. It's always and should always be costing us much more than any fines or anything like that that it brings in, because it, like taxes, like council tax and local government, is an investment in our infrastructure of our company, of our country. So the fact that people, you know, turning around and saying, okay, we need to generate revenue because this way we can support police officers, is not the way to be. That is a symptom of something which shouldn't be happening in the first place. You shouldn't be cutting it if you need to. And we need more police officers out there. We need more police officers on the roads. I would much rather see more police officers on the roads than see more cameras on the roads.
Exactly. I mean, when my car got written off outside our house, because where we live, there are only three police vehicles to deal with traffic incidents.
Mm-hmm.
So the traffic police, sorry. That's what I was stumbling over. And they were busy on another accident.
Yeah.
So they couldn't come and deal with the issue until 9 hours later, when the person who had run into my car had gone home and, shall we say, equalized their blood levels.
Oh, right, yes, it's sometime later.
Mm. Yes, so there was. So what they did, they didn't get punished for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whereas I did get punished.
Yes, and I think we.
But yeah. The whole point was, I want to see more of them on the road. That will cut down on silly driving. That will cut down on bad behaviour, because people will be pulled over and people will be done. Earlier this last week,
mm-hmm.
We had so much fog around. And how many people, you probably had it yourself, how many people bothered to switch the lights on? Or only have the daylight running lights on?
quite a lot, because I was coming up the stretch of M1 we've just been talking about, to be perfectly honest, in that. And it wasn't, we were lucky it wasn't so bad down here as it was up with you guys. But yeah, the fantastic deterrent effect.
Yeah.
That having police out and about doing things actually gives.
But we'll have the piece written by Andrew Brady from Motoring Research in the show notes.
Yep, absolutely.
So you can read that.
Yep, it's well worth it. Shall we have some good news for a little bit?
Please.
Well done, Fiat. Congratulations. Today, November the 10th, they are producing their 1.5 millionth Fiat 500 in Poland. Done that in a little more than 8 years. Well done. It's good.
Good. Well done. It's a nice little quirky, funky little car.
Mm-hmm.
Looks good. Bit of fun. Yes, well done.
Yeah, definitely. If I were looking for that kind of size and style of car, or somebody else was asking for my recommendation, then the 500 is definitely on the list. So, yep, well done, and congratulations to the new owner in France of that 1.2 liter pop model in white that is that 1.5 millionth. So, yes, congratulations on your new car, Monsieur Madame.
Now I'm gonna. If people have followed me on Twitter for a while, you will know that I've not always been complimentary of Vauxhalls of the, not the recent ones, because I've not had too much of a go, although the last generation's Insignia was not a hit in our household. But I have to say how the Vauxhall chairman has dealt with the Zafira B recall issue. I think Vauxhall should be applauded for that. I think they've done a really good job of sticking that video out there. They do acknowledge that there is a time gap between them realizing there was an issue and them making the official statement on what has to be done. But he does say in there that there was a reason for that. They wanted to come out with facts to say exactly what the problem was. But I think other car manufacturers should take note and follow that suit myself.
Yes. I thought what was interesting was that he pointed out one of the reasons for the delay was that because the issue with poorly repaired, and that is a key point, poorly repaired heater electrics has been causing fires, then very often it's very hard to forensically diagnose what happened because everything has been melted to smash anyway, and yeah. That and he was pointing out that was one of the issues that they'd faced whilst trying to make sure, whilst trying to basically work out what's been happening, and it turns out it is to do with things that have been poorly repaired, rather than things which have been installed from the factory. But he does that in a nice way. He doesn't say it's not our fault or anything like that. They're absolutely not. Going through this stuff or just treating it with disdain because they're saying, well, people shouldn't have done it wrongly. It's a really nice textbook piece of video about just how to go about one of these things, and some lovely, here's what we're going to tell you, here's us telling you it, and here's what we've told you approach to it. From that kind of point of view, it's really good and really clear, and you know, it's not exactly the most exciting 5 minutes you'll spend on YouTube, but it's an interesting lesson, I think. And just not just for car companies. Absolutely not just for car companies.
No, but we on this podcast, in our short life on this podcast, have not been over complimentary about how people have been proactive, how companies have been proactive with passing on news and information. And I wanted to say, you know, well done, Vauxhall, and well done to Rory Harvey, who's the chairman and managing director.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know now that they'll high five themselves because we've said well done, but
yes, absolutely, as they should, as they should. No, nice piece of stuff there. Speaking of safety, and car safety. Another announcement today, this time from the people at Euro NCAP. I'm sure that all our listeners, almost all our listeners, know who Euro NCAP are. They're the European safety organization who do a lot of vehicle testing. Most best known for their crash tests and side impact tests and that kind of thing. And they're the people that give out the stars to measure just just how well your car copes and protecting you and protecting any pedestrians or anyone else that you may bump into or who may bump into you by whichever means. Anyway, after which long and rambling introduction, they have introduced a new test. Okay, so with new vehicles offering more autonomous driver assist systems, Euro NCAP's autonomous emergency braking pedestrian tests will make it simpler for consumers and manufacturers to find out which systems work best. Basically, there many new cars these days have those sensors that try to make sure you avoid hitting pedestrians that step out in front of you and recognize the pedestrians and stuff. And so they're actually going to test which ones work well and which ones don't. So it's not just a line on the spec sheet, but it's a line on the spec sheet where you can understand how well that particular implementation works.
Well, I think that's great, but I do wonder, I can see how people go, right, what's the NCAP rating for this car on, you know, the passengers inside the car? But, I mean, I know it's the start of this, so maybe it will further develop in time and people will start going, oh, actually, this car has a 5-star on the autonomous braking for pedestrian, and this other car that I'm judging against only has a 3-star. Yeah, I mean, it's only a good thing. It can only be a good thing. The more systems they test, can only be a good thing.
And there's a couple of tests in there. It's not just one single test.
No.
So the aim of the game is to try and be able to avoid pedestrian dummies at speeds of up to 40 kilometers an hour, 25 miles an hour-ish, and at higher speeds, sort of between 25 and 40-ish miles an hour. The aim is to make the collision speed of less than 25 miles an hour in the hope that way the impact is more survivable. All of this kind of wraps together into an overall rating. But it's an interesting stepping stone to being able to... I don't know. It's like the road test of the future, isn't it? It's like, right, this autonomous vehicle is very good at avoiding other vehicles, but not so good at avoiding pedestrians. I don't care about pedestrians. I'm going to be choosing this one. And it is starting to work towards that kind of thing.
I can see how it moves on then to how well does your adaptive cruise control work?
Yeah.
And things like that, you know, that is an easy to see step, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that becomes very valuable.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, that's a good one. They have videos illustrating what these tests are like on their YouTube channel. So if you've thrilled yourself for 5.5 minutes with the Vauxhall video, you can go and spice it up a little bit more by watching demonstrations of how these tests are going to work.
Yes, links will be in the show notes. But moving to the subject that seems to have been ever present since we've started.
Yes, I'm really not kidding that one of these times we're going to have a little. Trailer intro for Volkswagen news.
Over the weekend, it was reported that Volkswagen managers were afraid to travel to the US for fear of prosecution. And this was, the company have said this was only speculation. But I'm not going to even try and pretend to pronounce the German paper this time because of my appalling attempt last time with something that was fairly simple. But they claim that this is what was going on because, well, there's one employee in America that has allegedly had their passport confiscated after they've flown out there. So everyone else is now worried. And justifiably, I think. Although some will turn around and say, but if you've done nothing wrong, what have you got to be afraid of? But I don't think it's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm. The trouble is that if you do that, then it starts to make it look like a criminal investigation rather than a civil investigation. But I believe it, but it's slightly different in the US, and I can't even pretend to know enough about their legal system to follow that one.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, it's the further complications for Volkswagen start. They've started, haven't they?
Yeah. This is the follow-on thing. And yeah, it's just a tricky one. It's just the kind of silly trail-on things, and we're going to see what happens. But remember that this is speculation by German newspaper sources. This isn't anything confirmed.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to mark that difference.
Yes, that's quite right. It is. There's a lot of allegedlys we can throw in there.
Yeah, totally.
But moving on, but still connected with Volkswagen, I came across a rather excellently written piece by Mark Carberry,
mm-hmm.
talking about what it's likely to have caused this issue in the first place for Volkswagen, which is the way that they targeted being the number one seller.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is a very well written piece, talking about the conflicts within the VW group itself.
Yes, yeah, and quite a lot of it referencing stuff that he wrote prior to all of this, saying that this was very, very likely to happen as well.
Yes.
So this isn't just something that has been dreamt up after the point in order to jump in and try and cash in on this, like many, many stories we've been seeing. This does reference back to stuff that he wrote before any of this broke. There's a lot of thought and work has gone into this, and it's well worth 10 or 15 minutes of your time. But yeah, as Andrew was saying before I butted in there, one of the things about it is the homogenization of all of the different brands within its portfolio.
Mm.
And how it's becoming harder and harder to differentiate between, say, at Skoda's, Volkswagen's, Audi's, et cetera, et cetera. You know, really, you are at the stage where you kind of pick a sizey type of thing that you want, and then choose which badge you prefer the look of more than anything else, really.
Yeah. Yep. No, the link to this will be in the show notes.
I'd love to talk my way through all the paragraphs, but it does take away the fact that really, I Mark's work is well worth reading, and he's significantly more. Yeah, his descriptions are significantly better than my verbal semi ad libs.
Yeah, he is more eloquent than us.
Yes, eloquent. You see, that's the word. I couldn't even think of the word eloquent. That's how bad it had got just there. You know, I mean, it takes a fine example of Volkswagen starting to tread on Audi's toes. Now, I don't know about many of you, but I've been noticing more and more Passats appearing on the roads, fewer and fewer Audi A6s, for example, with Volkswagen pushing into that space. And Audi, in turn, you know, with stuff like the R8 starting to squeeze into the supercar area and into Lamborghini and Porsche and the other parts of it, and just, you know, Bentley and the Bentayga coming in and starting to squeeze into the Porsche Cayenne territory and all that kind of stuff. Just worth your time to read it, and I'll stop warbling now. but yeah, really good piece. Really good piece. On that. One last little Volkswagen-y bit. As part of this, the Volkswagen Group design chief, Walter De Silva, is retiring. He's stepping down from all of his various seats. That makes him sound like a tiny little person, doesn't it? Stepping down from all his seats.
Yeah, but he's still connected with the company.
Yeah, he's mostly retiring, but he does still have an advisory role with the group, which I think is, you know, soft exit in there. In case you've never heard of Walter De Silva, you've definitely heard of some of the stuff that he's done. Absolutely heard of some of his work. He did lots of uncredited stuff in Fiat and at the IDEA Institute. But where really I first heard of him was the launch of the Alpha 156, and that piece of work. And to be honest, the 156 and that sort of new style of Alpha design in the late 1990s really kind of became his signature look. You've got that deep grille. You've got the kind of slightly angry headlamps off to each side. With, you know, the 156, the 147, the 166, which actually, as I'm sure us nerds know or are aware, and I'm sure people will be quick to correct me if I am actually wrong in this, the 166 was designed before the 156, but launched afterwards.
The 156 is so pretty.
It is pretty, but you can see that there's that core in there of, right, we're going to have this kind of triangular grille. We're going to have the lights off to the side again with that bit of a bit of aggression in there. And you can see that whenever he moved to Seat, stuff like the Salsa, Tango, Roadster, those kinds of cars, those early ones, when Volkswagen was really trying to position Seat as being sporty, 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 okay, and as the Spanish Alfa Romeo in there. And that
great
was why.
Accent.
Ross,
great
thank
accent.
You.
Well done. Just alienate anyone who is Spanish.
Well, obviously.
Or who's been to Spain.
I had to pick up for you earlier on. Oh, I can't help it. Yeah, so again, we ended up with that trapezoidal Seat grille, lights off to the side, and then, of course, you. Was promoted essentially from Seat into Audi, and Audi, we end up with this big trapezoidal deep grille and these aggressive lights off to the side. So he did have a certain style to some of his later work, but there's actually something more more fundamental in this. And I do wonder if this is going to start, you know, with Volkswagen's new strategy that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, if this is if this is going to start a new design language for Volkswagen. And I think that is quite important.
Yeah, I mean, with the restructuring they're doing at board level, that mm-hmm. people won't be wearing as many hats and all the rest of it, will the individual companies be given more freedom? Because the last CEO apparently was... He needed to approve everything, didn't he? Mm-hmm. So now he's gone out the way. Will the new approach be, no, hang on, you are Porsche. We trust you, Porsche, to do the Porsche thing. Mm-hmm. Off you go. Now, Seat, we trust you to go off and do your Seat-y thing, which will differentiate you from everyone else in them.
Which
in
is
the
going
market,
to be an interesting one, because nobody really knows what Seat does. I mean, they're meant to be the sporty Italian one, but the sporty Spanish. Italian Mediterranean brand, and
the FR Leon now looks great.
It does look great.
I'm slightly conflicted because the VW group is very much of a minimalist, a couple of straight lines across the flanks of the cars and a few swoops, and that's how they do it. And mm-hmm. on Skoda and Seat, I think that looks great. Yeah. On VW, I think it looks a bit dull. And, well, we've made many comments about Audi front grilles and struggling to spot differences. in different models. So hopefully Audi can develop its own more language. Interesting identity now.
Yes. Yes, quite.
And Volkswagen itself needs to decide what, you know, we need to know what Volkswagen is, because at the minute Volkswagen just looks like the safe option.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, whilst it must be scary for people who are in the company, it's quite an interesting and exciting time to see how the rest of the group are going to be allowed to go forward, bearing in mind that they're cutting things like 100 million euros from the design budget.
It's a lot of paperclips.
It's a lot of photocopying ink.
I'm slightly worried, actually, that I've just been a bit harsh on the last sort of 20 years worth of Walter De Silva's work. I feel that's been a bit cruel. So whilst, you know, please say that whilst I'm saying he does have a kind of house design, I'm really not dissing his abilities or saying that I dislike his stuff.
Well, absolutely, no, just look at the Muria concept. Muria concept. Yeah. That's...
I love the op. I think it looks great.
Yeah, the up is great.
Such a lovely, minimal piece of design. So there's a really good little sort of, it's only, I'm just disappointed that it's only kind of six slides long, but there's a little slideshow on topgear.com, which I'm sure that will end up in the show notes, with kind of six of his highlights. And I urge you to go look at them and recognize them and just see that, you know, blooming heck, I wish I could have done that.
Yeah, quite.
Yeah. One last thing that he also designed, not all cars. So a little bit like Giorgetto Giugiaro, which I'm told is an all right pronunciation of it. by a genuine 100% Italian, I'll have you know. He also designed the Leica M9 Titanium in 2010. So Leica, as I'm sure you know, particularly high-end camera brand, the one with the titanium body, they only made 500 of them, and they cost almost 20 grand each for a compact camera.
Does somebody come along with that to take photographs for you?
I don't care. It looks lovely. It's really nice. So yes, that's not just cars, and I promise that it does not have a deep triangular shaped lens. It has a fantastically traditional looking compact camera lens.
The flash is offset either side and narrow.
That's nothing. You should see where they put the model number. Yes, the serial number is over to the side. Otherwise, it would get in the way of the lens. Yeah, lovely. Anyway, quick aside there, out of motoring for a second or two into some other stuff that I love. Good old product design stuff. So quickly before we finish up, and I had posted on Twitter earlier on, I haven't found an and finally yet, and it was whilst Andrew and I were actually doing our preparation, because believe it or not, we do actually do preparation for this.
God, imagine what it'd be like if we did.
I know. Like last week's. was I went to see Spectre, not the weekend we've just had, actually, the weekend before. And one of the reasons that people like me go to see James Bond movies, as well as the fact that I really like Bond movies, is of course to see the cast that are in it, not just the locations, not just the wonderful cinematography these days, but to see some of the cast in it. And I was really, really impressed with, well, given the amount of coverage there was of JLR and the, you know, the Jaguars the Land Rovers and the Range Rovers that were going to be in the movie, and I'm not really sure if this is more of a compliment towards the production designers on Spectre or to JLR themselves, but it was wonderful to see how well matched some of the vehicles were in the film, and also to see that it wasn't like some of the product placements in the last couple of generations of Bond movies, where absolutely everything in shot in this big car park was a Ford of some description. But there was a mix of there were some Mercedes in there. There were some Fiats in there. There were all sorts of bits and pieces. It's even in places where they could quite easily have shoved yet another Defender. Then actually they decided, no, in this case, we're going to have a pair of G-Wagons just sitting there quite nicely. And it was nice from an automotive point of view. I feel it was really quite well matched. I think there's a little bit of debate as to whether, the chap that ended up with the lovely CX-75 would actually have fitted in a CX-75. But other than that kind of thing, it was quite nicely done. And, of course, Aston Martin in there too. Yes, I'd completely forgotten. Isn't that bad? In fact, it's awesome for Jaguar that I actually forgot about the Aston Martin.
Yes, that means they've won the PR.
You have won the PR race. Congratulations, JLR, top of the tree there. Because I'm still far more stoked about the Range Rover Sport SVR with the humongous light bar across the roof, which sadly we never got to see in any sort of decent action. I mean the light bar, not the Range Rover. Than I did about the Aston Martin.
I mean, there was no scenes where they just went rabbiting or something. down in the lower 40 acres, we've got real trouble we have down there with them there rabbits. Let's go get them with our big light bar.
And you complained about my Spanish accent. Yeah. So they actually decided, the baddies decided to kidnap people rather than go lamping on the in the Swiss Alps. So it was just really, really nicely done. From an automotive point of view, there was a relatively gentle touch. I was a little bit worried with the amount of PR that was going on beforehand that it was just going to be a Land Rover fest. But even things like, just incidental stuff like there's a Hilux plays a key part in the story at one point. And these kind of things, and an older Model XJ, just some of these bits and pieces. I don't want to give too much away. But from a sort of spotting the cars point of view, it was really, really quite nice. Nice to see, and a nice touch on there. Anyway, that's it. I shall stop on that. Which, me giving up wittering about that kind of thing, takes us pretty much to the end of this week's episode, I think. Is there anything I missed, Andrew?
No, I think we've covered everything of interest to us anyway.
Nailed it. Yeah, that's right. Well, even then. Yeah. Pushing it a bit there. What's nice is we've made it to episode 10. We're at double figures.
Right, connected cars.
You see, this is
15 episodes of connected cars.
I knew this was going to happen. In case some of you don't know, then the agreement Andrew and I made at the start of this, whenever we started, actually 11 episodes ago now, given that there's 10 plus zero, was that we would wait until double figures before he was allowed to go all tinfoil hatty. Okay, I'm sorry, guys, we're at double figures. And I think we're going to do something a little bit special about connected cars, aren't we?
Yeah.
We've not quite worked out the details yet. But
it's in the future. It's not next week. Don't worry. You don't have to unsubscribe yet.
Don't unsubscribe yet. we feel that we're going to do something a little bit special on that because we would like to spend some time on
we'd like that. To treat it, the subject, with some respect and look at it from both sides and not just be all Faraday caged.
Speak for yourself, mate.
Well, I'm trying desperately hard not to be.
No. So yes, to actually get a good balanced piece, which hopefully will be something to be treasured and enjoyed, as opposed to jamming it in as an item in the regular show. So yeah. Time's come for us to start thinking about that and to actually get move on with that. In the meantime, between now and then, or if you have any thoughts on connected cars or any of the things we've discussed in this evening's program, then please don't hesitate to get in touch with us. Andrew, what's the best way of getting in touch with you?
Best way is via Twitter. If you search for @CrackedWindscreen, you will find me there. And how about you, Alan?
Pretty much the same as far as Twitter goes. Different Twitter handle, of course. It is @AJPBradley. That's the best way to get hold of me there. Naturally, there is a motoring podcast Twitter address @motoringpodcast, and the hub of all our activities and where you can see some extra stuff, some extra little blog posts that we make, videos, that kind of stuff is of course at www.motoringpodcast.com. Episodes are out on all your favorite podcasting media. So if you listen to us via our website, it is possible to not just have to go to the website. You can also subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, any number. The list is there on the page. And yeah, if you are using those, if you could give us a rating, give us a review, and tell us what you like or about the show, that would be fantastic. Alternatively, tell us what you don't like about the show, but if you could not do it there, that would be great.
Yeah, we have had feedback on Twitter, which we really appreciate, where people have commented on the stuff they felt we've done well, and they have, in a fair way, they have commented on stuff they feel that we could do a bit better or maybe need to tweak. So yeah, we'd love to hear from you and let us know what you think. It really, we're only, okay, 11 shows into it, but 10 shows, we're still finding our feet with this. Mm-hmm. So if you have some strong feelings about what we're doing, we would really appreciate hearing from you.
Yeah, and we really feel that those of you who have been given feedback can see that quite a lot of it has been taken on board, and hopefully you're noticing the effects of that feedback. We really, really appreciate it. Last but not least, the bit that we missed out, of course, is if you have enjoyed it, don't just do all that. Tell your mates, because word of mouth is so much better than any other way of recommending stuff. And we really, really appreciate that. So on which happy note? Oh, that sounds a little bit Top Gearish. Pardon me. So on which note? Anyway, this week, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And until the next time, safe motoring.